The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, it mocked my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nations Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G.
Yay!
And tonight I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects, at Agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And hopefully join us later tonight. We'll be at PCN_Dirt on Twitter.
Dirt's doing yeoman's work, yes.
He's currently playing the role of Best Buy Geek Squad for a friend of his who has a computer or tablet that needed working on.
Right.
So if he makes it home in time, he will be hopping on the show with us. And of course, at home, at work, I assume, is at Roddy Cat on Twitter. And make sure to go to our website, theclicknation.com. You can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. There it goes.
Yeah, I was about to say, I clicked it, it didn't ring.
It feels funny doing this beginning of spiel since I haven't done it like the last 3 weeks.
Oh, because we've had a run of guests on the show.
Yeah. And for those watching on video, excuse me for laying in the comforts of my bed tonight. My sinuses are acting up, and I don't feel like walking upstairs to the office.
Not that the sinuses are funny. I just think it's funny that you're apologizing.
Yeah. See, if we were just an audio-only podcast, no one would know the difference. Either way. Let's see, follow the Twitter account at CBCron. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TheClickNation. Add us to your Google Plus circles, search for The Click Nation. And actually, I believe you can also go to google.com/+TheClickNation. Subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Just search for The Click Nation. And we're on youtube.com/TheClickNation. We are a part of the CSPN podcasting network. Make sure to go to their website, cspn.us. Use the hashtags CBCron or Comic Book Chronicles on your favorite social media websites to join in the discussion. What else am I forgetting? We record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And make sure to go to Dirt's website at popculturenetwork.com.
I think we got everything maybe news nerds need.
Yes, Roddy Cat's social media news feed account is at news nerds need. I feel like we're forgetting something else. Let's see, CSPN has a Redbubble store outlet where you can buy Comic Book Chronicles gear. Go to redbubble.com/people/CSPN/shop. All right, let's get into some cinematic news for the week.
What's been going on?
Transformers Writer's Room wraps. Akiva Goldsman scripting Transformers 5, animated film by Atman, Scribes, Barrier, and Ferrari.
Okay.
A DC boss says TV sharing movie universe with handcuffed creators.
Oh, subtle shots, throwing shade.
I actually kind of agree with her on that.
Well, I think they can be connected very, very lightly. That's the way I see it working best, because I think we've all been introduced. I think even the mainstream viewer has been introduced to this connected universe And I don't, I don't think that they come to expect it, but I think that they've come to understand that sometimes, these things do, these things don't always happen, but I don't, it's tough to explain the concept to these people that, there's going to be another Flash in the movies, Yeah. And it's always tough to describe that to a mainstream viewer when they ask, well, is it the same actor? And you just say, no. Is it the same story? Well, it's similar, blah, blah, blah. I think they could go through avoid a whole lot of drama, not even drama, just a whole lot of complication by at least linking them on a very, wide level. Not necessarily the way Marvel's doing it with S.H.I.E.L.D., but I think that, if you're dropping Easter eggs, I think that's enough.
Yeah, I just think that not tying into anything just allows the creators to actually just tell a story and not have to worry about how this ties into something off in the TV world that they don't really need to worry about. Both of them, both doing a shared universe and not, they all had their advantages and disadvantages. So it's just a matter of how they navigate the waters in both of them. All right. Justice League Unlimited Blu-ray is in the works. People got their first looks at Red Tornado in the CBS television series Supergirl.
Oh, I wish Dirt were here to throw a copy of the picture on our screens so that the YouTube audience will be able to see this. I was kind of embarrassed to look at that. What did you think?
To me, it looked just like any other character. I mean, it reminded me of the Apocalypse images from X-Men Apocalypse.
I was embarrassed by it because it just looked like, I hate to say this, it looked like a cosplayer with a couple extra bucks in the budget put that together.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my opinion. Listen, no knock on cosplayers because some of them really do a good job. But when I saw this, it looked pretty... it didn't look very much like an android. I don't know if Red Tornado is going to be an android. It didn't look like one to me.
Yeah, it looked pretty real.
Well, when you say real, do you mean like human?
Yeah, like human.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say the same thing about the Vision in Age of Ultron, but, I'll hold any further criticism until I see it in action on the TV show. But at first glance, I was pretty underwhelmed.
Yeah. Supergirl season 1 trailer debuts during Scorpion, this television series on CBS. Legends of Tomorrow adds Mr. Robot star as Soviet villainess.
Okay.
For some reason, people were making a big deal about what Peter Parker's age is going to be in Captain America: Civil War.
He's supposed to be in his mid-teens, right? So I guess allowing, yeah, like 15 or 16, I think. And I think that what that allows for is just another chance at telling some high school Peter Parker, telling a movie, telling some stories while he's still young, pre-college, pre-Empire State University,
None of this is surprising if you've been paying attention to, they said they want to go high school age.
Right.
So you assume 15 or 16. But people are like, find out what Spider-Man's age is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Ah, I love this. On Twitter, Roddy Cat is doing work as usual. Yeoman's work in this case. On the Red Tornado costume, he says he thought he looked like Yul Brynner. Yul Brynner! So let it be written.
Let it be done.
That's right. Ah, I'm so glad Tim got the reference.
Sebastian Stan calls Zack Snyder out over his Ant-Man jib.
Jibe. Wasn't much there.
Yeah, this is my first time seeing it, but I don't even care to read what it was about. Wesley Snipes says there's always a possibility for another Blade film.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Because he wants work.
He's got to pay Uncle Sam.
If I keep throwing it out there, maybe Marvel will bite.
Ah.
We know this ploy.
Mm-hmm. All too well.
Gotham's showrunner says Court of Owls planned for the series. As I said last night on Twitter, any other time I'd be excited about this news, but since it has to do with Gotham, I don't care.
I mean, you know what's funny about that is, you know, we're all not, at least the members of this show panel are not impressed with Gotham to this point. But Gotham, believe it or not, I still think has a lot of mainstream appeal and mainstream success under its belt. And going into a second season, I think I read somewhere, I don't know if it was this article or if it was a similarly titled article, where they're planning on putting Court of Owls into, I believe, this season, rolling into next season. And I think it's a great way to introduce this particular concept and really entrenching it in, you know, the Batman canon. You know, it'll actually make for introducing the recent Batman run by Snyder and Capullo to viewers of Gotham a little easier.
Yeah. All right. On to the comic book news of the week. DC's Dark Knight 3, The Master Race, featured on New York Comic Con program cover.
Oh, is it now? Wonderful. Can't be, you know.
News that concerns you.
Exactly. I'll be picking up the program, I guess. But I'm still not I'm not a fan of the title. It just always makes my skin crawl when I hear
it. Yeah, it could have gone a little better
not
there.
Not a fan. Oh, by the way, Matt Wang 97, my game face is prepping as we speak for New York Comic Con. I was off the air. I was telling Tim DOGG that I was already in the midst of prepping for New York Comic Con. I was trying to figure out what books I need to pull to get signed. So you know, the prep's already started because it's not far away now.
Time is near.
Yep. All right. Anyway, back to comic book news. Where are we?
Let's see. Click back. Mega Man is not canceled.
Yeah.
For now at DC. Was I the only one on the show reading that?
No, I think wasn't Roddy reading it, or am I mistaken? I know that we've been trying to keep up with it because based on your recommendations. So. Or at least I have been. So, you know, I'm glad that it's gotten a new lease on life.
Yeah. At least its promised 12-issue run. Bill Finger to receive credit for co-creating Batman. And I think they said that's going to be attached to the movie credits.
Yeah.
At least start in there. Maybe it'll trickle down to the comics as well.
It's a good thing. You know, credit where credit is due and all that.
Archie is going to have some layoffs, unfortunately. It's never want to see people losing jobs. Titan Comics announces Snowpiercer 3 Terminus.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Silver Surfer is going to relaunch in the all-new, all-different Marvel universe.
That's good.
Same creative team of Dan Slott and the Allreds.
Nice. I'm glad to hear that. Glad to hear it.
Let's see. Larry Hama debriefs G.I. Joe's Cobra World Order. I'm assuming that's a story arc over at G.I. Joe.
All right.
James Tynion IV and Eric Donovan are bringing us End of the World series Cognetic. Dark Horse to collect Daniel Warren Johnson's webcomic Space Mullet in 2016.
Space Mullet. All right. Oh, we're getting up to some big news.
Yeah, the big news of the week. Hopefully you're going to say his name right. Ta-Nehisi Coates to write
Ta-Nehisi, I believe. I apologize if I'm butchering it. But
Ta-Nehisi Coates. Ta-Nehisi Coates to write Black Panther comic for Marvel. With Brian Steele Freeze as artist.
That's awesome.
That's going on my pull list.
Yep. That's awesome stuff.
Archie brings back the teen scene investigators for a digital collection of Archie's mysteries. Simone and Kyla Fiore reunite for Surviving Megalopolis.
Okay.
I want to read that trade. I heard some good things about it. Supposedly Vertigo wants comic book pitches that will work on TV budgets.
Really?
That's rumored from Bleeding Cool.
Hmm.
But they want stuff that'll be easily adapted to TV, so nothing set in the far past or the far future.
I gotcha. All right, cool.
Comixology's Batman Day sale has 1,001 comics for a buck each.
Nice.
Barnes & Noble announces Batman Day celebration. DC Comics rushes to publish a Supergirl comic alongside the CBS show for $1, but just the one.
Okay.
And they're reprinting, I think, like the original New 52 series. Independence Day Resurgence to get comic book prequel. Gendy Tartakovsky still wants Marvel to publish his Luke Cage comic.
All right.
Humphreys and Boyle play Cupid with creator-owned Jonesy at Boom Studios imprint BoomBots. That's Sam Humphreys, the writer. Chelsea Kane to write ongoing Mockingbird series for Marvel in 2016.
Cool.
Jeff Lemire and Greg Smallwood bring back Moon Knight in 2016.
Nice. I'm glad that that's being spaced out. I think those two titles would be kind of overwhelmed in the glut that's coming with all new, all different.
I'd assume they'll be in the spring, along with like when Black Panther comes out.
You know?
They said spring 2016 sure. for Panther.
Right. But I'm glad these two, you know, in particular, I'm looking forward to them, but just as well, I believe that it's good for the title that they're not going to be rushed out, you know, within the first few months of all new, all different.
Right. Ryder Cat says he wasn't reading Omega Men.
Okay.
And Kyle Higgins is going to write the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers comic for Boom in 2016. I remember that announcement when it first came out, but they had never said who the art or the creative team on it was going to be. So There you go.
All righty.
Let's see. In Variant Corner news, DC announces variant covers for New York Comic Con. Own original Grumpy Cat art from Ken Hauser.
Yeah. Some of the latest hip-hop variant covers from Marvel's All New, All Different. The cover images were released this past week, and some of the artists and some of the albums that we all kind of thought needed to be homaged were dealt with, specifically Ice Cube and Snoop Dogg. They did an homage to the cover of Death Certificate and Doggy Style, the debut album for Snoop Dogg. So, you know, and in addition, they also did homages to Diggable Planet's Blowout Comb and Method Man's Tical. So, you know, if you're a fan of these, as I am, as most of the members of the show are. You know, these are actually, you know, pretty well done and are going to be added to the list of things to possibly hunt down in the near future.
All right. Let's see. Block print variants, Vader Down, Totally Awesome Hulk, and Gwenpool art from Marvel's Baltimore presentation.
Like I said, block print variants. I'm going to have to take a look at that.
Yeah, I guess that was from that same Baltimore retailer summit taking place today and yesterday. All right, time to read our ad for the week. Today's podcast is sponsored by MyComicShop.com. Go to cspn.us, then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, click on the My Comic Shop banner and order from a vast selection of new releases, back issues, vintage classics, graphic novels, and more to be delivered right to your door. Why bother slipping to the local comic book store where you can order your books online? My Comic Shop through cspn.us. Do it today.
Nice.
Let's see.
Wow, I didn't think I read this many books.
Yeah, you had the same reaction I had after I jotted mine down. I was like, whoa, I read 6 books.
I didn't realize.
6 and a half, I guess.
Yeah. I read 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 and a half because I skimmed the Airwolf Airstrikes trade paperback this week. But I read enough of it to talk about it. The Airwolf Airstrikes number 1. But we'll talk about that. What did we both read this week? The Fury 50th Shield Anniversary. You want to talk about that?
We can talk about it. That's the last book I read before the show.
Ah, it's fresh in your memory. All right, let's do it.
So this is a dual story combining both generations of Furies. Nick Fury Sr. and Jr. As my lights flick around and off for some reason.
Oh, no.
It's raining outside, but it's not storming, so I'm not sure what that's about.
Knock on wood. Hopefully Tim stays with us for the duration.
Anyway, so it's a flashback / time travel story where the part in the past takes place in 1965, and then the story in the present. In the 1965 story, the riots of Watts is taking place, and S.H.I.E.L.D. and Nick Fury and company are sort of overlooking things and want to get involved. And then the present day, Nick Fury Jr. is leading a S.H.I.E.L.D. team to take down the villain Hate-Monger.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I liked how they, at least the beginning part of the story, was just like sort of a split screen.
It was a parallel.
Yeah.
They were telling the story in parallel, so that made it pretty interesting to see how, you know, the stories from 1965 and the story from the present day were really running, unfortunately, at very similar, with very similar narratives.
Yeah. So the S.H.I.E.L.D. team of the past is trying to get ready to help out the Watts riots, and Nick Fury Jr. is taking his team to take down the Hate-Monger. He catches up with Hate-Monger, starts fighting him, and then I guess they get too close to a Hydra teleportation platform device, and they both get teleported back to 1965. So now Nick Fury Jr. is smack dab in the middle of Nick Fury Sr.'s story back in 1965.
Right. And what was funny about this, and what I really got a kick out of, I mean, we understand that there is a larger story being told here about the unfortunate unending strife that comes with racism in this country. But one of the amusing things that was inserted into this book was that apparently at some point Nick Fury instituted what did he call them? S.H.I.E.L.D. time travel protocols.
Yeah, time travel protocols
and time displacement protocols. And I got a kick out of that because we've been exposed to enough time travel in pop culture and movies and whatnot where some people, you know, decide to, or at least some creators decide to enforce the rule where, you know, if you change one thing at some point in the future, you know, multiple things can go wrong because you changed one little thing. Forget trying to kill Adolf Hitler, right? So, right. So it's funny that, like, the writer of this particular story, I'm not sure who's writing this.
David F. Walker.
So Walker's instituting very strict time displacement the way time travel is interpreted in this issue is very straightforward and very butterfly effect like, and I thought that was pretty interesting that was the whole premise of the story. You know, that was one of the reasons why Hate-Monger is actually going back into time to try to do something because he wants to affect the future, because he's looking to do precisely what I was just discussing, which is change one little thing in the grand scheme of things to hopefully, change the world as we know it in the present day and in the future.
Right.
I don't know if I want to get into what the plot was.
They get teleported to the past, and then Fury Jr. has to work with Fury Sr. to recover.
Well, to stop, right. Monger.
Right. Well, they need to catch him. They need, exactly. First, they're just concerned with catching him, but then he, while he's in the past, he's going to try to do something, like mm-hmm. you said, change the present slash future. That's about all you need to say.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's an interesting plot as well that he's trying to pull off. I thought the ending was actually pretty poignant, because I don't think we've gotten this kind of understanding between the two characters because Fury Jr. was obviously retconned into a Marvel continuity pretty drastically, pretty suddenly. And we never really got to see them interact before Fury Sr. was, was made the new Watcher. So, you know, kind of seeing this, even though it's not an interaction as it is a monologue or even just, you know, thinking out loud on Fury Jr.'s behalf, because of Fury Sr. being the Watcher, he hears it, he knows. And so he understands, he's come to, I think the two of them have come to a better understanding of each other.
Yeah. Even though in the present day, it's not like they're having a conversation in the present.
Mm-hmm.
Art by Lee Ferguson, which I thought was really good.
I thought it was good enough.
I was going to say the tone for both the past and the present was the same, but I don't know. I like this panel layouts. I liked just visually how he had Fury Senior, even though he was a younger man back in 65,
mm-hmm.
how he looked and the way he drew Nick Fury Jr.
No, I agree with you. The layouts I thought were pretty well done. You know, the panels, while not the most, you know, it's not exactly the most inventive way of laying out the panels, I thought, you know, really helped tell the story. And sometimes that's the most important. You know, that's the most important thing, is telling the story. It makes it easy to follow. You know, the heck with all the creative. You know, I'm thinking of Bucky, the Winter Soldier. You know, with all those crazy panel layouts.
Mm-hmm. That gets overwhelming.
Yeah. So, you know, sometimes you just need something straightforward where the story is easy to follow. And I think that, you know, I think that's Ferguson pulls that off here.
And the other thing we both read was Inhumans Attila and Rising number 5.
Yes. So I needed to be reminded, unfortunately, that this was the last issue of this Charles Soule scripted book. It was, the ending was kind of disheartening, but before I get to that, what we have here is the two factions of Inhumans ending up, you know, joining sides, because like a lot of the inhabitants of Battleworld, they figure out that something is amiss, that Doom is not necessarily their god, but is definitely controlling and pulling all of their strings. So what they're trying to do is rebel and join forces, and ultimately what comes out of it is Black Bolt becomes the Black Bolt that we know. Spoiler, not spoiler, because it's sort of what you expect in this book. But ultimately, what we find here is that this may very well have been kind of not an experiment per se, but this was something that that Doom was observing with a keen eye, and found that even in this reality that he engineered, Black Bolt ended up becoming what he knew him to be in the 616 pre Secret Wars, and he decides to, spoiler alert, flip the script without saying too much more.
And talk about a butterfly effect,
right?
Just some of that taking place here.
Definitely, definitely, definitely. So, I liked the book. I wasn't so keen on the ending because it felt like we hadn't really read anything of consequence. And I guess that's a byproduct of reading all these. That's going to happen when we read all of these Secret Wars series that may only have a very small peripheral effect on the all new, all different Marvel Universe when we are finished with Secret Wars. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all going to come out of a lot of these books saying, all right, so that was fun, but what was the point? Maybe there is no point other than it being fun.
Yeah. I guess it depends on if some of these series are going to continue after Secret Wars or not, mm-hmm. as far as what they reveal, or if they just end and that's it, or
Right. Okay. You know, I'll tell you one thing real quick, though. My favorite sequence in this, it was a very, very, it was like a two-panel sequence between Kamala Khan and Medusa.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where Kamala Khan basically says something along, she says, I don't get this, basically. You know, I'm a shapeshifter myself, so you need to verify your identity. I wish more Marvel characters thought along these lines.
Have everyone just
You know, because there's just, you know, too many Skrulls and shapeshifters running around, you know. So
kind of surprised that Skrulls haven't made a Secret Wars appearance, but I guess there really isn't too much cosmic stuff taking place besides Guardians of Nowhere.
Right.
Let's see. I guess I can jump on a comic that I read that you didn't. Batgirl number 44. She's taking on a villain called Velvet Tiger. It had something to do with smuggling tigers. There was a group of people that were trying to like rescue tigers, and I think Velvet Tiger's company had made arrangements to acquire the tigers, and the humanity group that was trying to rescue them for good thought that Velvet Tiger in her alter ego, regular, what do you call it when you're out of your costume? Is it not our alter ego, but
incognito,
which is her status quo as the owner of that company. They thought that she was going to do something good for the tigers, but she was actually using them for evil.
Mm.
And someone that Barbara Gordon knows in her regular life got involved in it and actually got kidnapped. So she had to go and try to rescue that woman. Let's see. Luke Fox, as you see on the cover, is involved a little bit. He's running another company. It's funny because I guess they all know each other's secret identity, which I guess because he was a part of the Bat family, that's why he'd know who Barbara Gordon was. But I wasn't sure if that was actually known fact to him or not.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he learned it in Batman Eternal. But there, as you see on the cover, you can't see it because the dirt's not here to show it, but there's like a nice smooch between the two of them near the end.
Okay.
To tease readers. The real highlight, though, besides artist Bingle, who's doing a guest spot here for Babs Tarr, was Frankie, Batgirl's friend that has been sort of doing the Oracle duties off-site, sort of being Batgirl's backup as far as handling the tech and communication side of things. She gets involved a little bit more here. There was one at the climax when Batgirl and Velvet Tiger are fighting. It looks like Batgirl's about to lose, and Frankie, as we find out later, sends her bat cycle in to rescue her. And she has like a device on the back of her neck, and she can mentally control a couple of like Batgirl drones and I guess her motorcycle.
Okay.
And at the end of the issue, we see her doing some training with the drones and the motorcycle. And like, then we see her with a little sly look on her face, like, yeah, this is about, business is about to pick up.
All right.
So that's something to look forward to in future issues. But the highlight to me was Bingle. His art is, I love his art. He did one section of the Batgirl annual, I think number 3, I think it was, that came out like a month or so ago. Okay. He's done some other like guest spots on, he did another issue of Batgirl as well. But I'd love to see him do more monthly books. He's done a bunch of covers as well for both Marvel and DC.
Right.
So that's Batgirl 44.
All right. What else? I guess I'll take a turn because I think we ran out of books that both of us read.
Yeah.
So, I've been the only member of the show that's been reading 1872, the Marvel Secret Wars Western, and it's a shame because I think you guys are all missing out. Yes, the story does revolve around Red Wolf, but the way the other Marvel characters that are that have been recast in Western roles, you know, their story has been pretty well told by I'm scrolling back in my copy to see who's on the credits on this. I think Jerry Duggan is writing this, and he does an excellent job of telling a good quality Western story. I'm not the biggest fan of Westerns. That's not something – I mean, it's something that I sort of grew up watching, you know, with my pops, but it's not something I was really ever into. But this is a quality Western story told with several Marvel characters making primary and secondary appearances here. Basically, what we're dealing with is a town that's being taken over by Roxxon and being run by Wilson Fisk, the Kingpin. There's a couple of cool scenes in this. I'm not going to spoil too much, but the version of Bullseye in this in 1872, Timely. Timely is the town that they're in. This version of Bullseye, spoiler alert, meets his end for the very reasons that I think many people have always thought. You know, there's a specific, let's say, physical characteristic that that Bullseye has, and a character kind of takes advantage of that. We'll put it that way. All in all, it's a pretty good Western tale. There's a lot of twists and turns that we've seen in many Western stories. I enjoyed this. I think that it's going to read better in collected form. I think that, you know, the Western format does turn off some readers, but I think all in all, reading this, reading all, I believe, four issues it's going to be. So, reading all four issues at once, I think, is going to help the experience and the way the story will read down the line. It's a good Western. I have to give it that.
Okay. You said Bullseye was in this?
Yes.
He's Western one of Bullseye.
Yeah, he's one of the Kingpin's enforcers.
Gotcha.
So, like I said, you know what? I don't blame if you don't want to pick it up now, and I don't blame if you want to avoid reading issue number four. But once all four are out, give it a shot.
I'm going to go to We Are Robin number four.
All right.
Where it's,
I've been reading this on and off, and I was surprised that I didn't make time to read this. Tell us about it.
And it picks up after the events of issue three, where the Robins were involved in a explosion that took the life of one of the Robins, and it's kind of a dour issue where they're like, you start off with the news, different news outlets reporting on the death of the young man.
Oh, so it's sort of confirmed?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, as confirmed as comic book stuff can be.
Right.
You know, they have the news outlets talking about this Robin movement and, you know, is it good or bad? Or and the issue focuses mostly on Riko. The Asian girl, Robin.
Okay.
She's adopted, so she lives with a white family. Like, her mom comes into her room at one point and is talking to her about the boy that she heard on the news that was killed, and how, you know, even though they went to separate schools, you know, just basically checking out her daughter, making sure that she's mm-hmm. all right, and they kind of go in this like philosophical discussion about, you know, was he doing the right thing? Her mother was saying, you know, what those Robin kids are doing isn't safe, and even what would their parents think of what they were doing, especially if they got hurt.
Right.
And Riko trying to, you know, play devil's advocate without revealing, you know, this is what she's doing also. She gets she leaves the house or apartment to go investigate a fire on top of a rooftop, which turns out to be false. A group of kids go around, I guess, like, they call it, I forget what the term they use, but they, like, they stage things to try to get superheroes or whatever to come check it out so they can, like, take selfies or videotape them.
All right.
Which is what happened here. She gets involved with the kids and getting into a fight with them, of course. And a guest star appears, Batgirl. Spoiler alert.
Ding, ding, ding.
So Batgirl shows up to lend a hand, but as she said, she was kind of observing from far away anyway, and it looked like Rico was handling things herself just fine. They leave before the police show up, and then they, of course, Rico and Batgirl kind of just have a nice heart-to-heart talk. Batgirl basically tells her, you know, this is a rough business, being, you know, trying to be a vigilante, you know, as Rico knows all too well, you know, people can get hurt. But Batgirl basically tells her, you know, this is what's in your heart. You got to follow your heart. So she kind of gives the seal of approval. And that's it. It was a guest artist. I have the book over here somewhere. Let's see.
James Harvey?
Yes, James Harvey.
It's not bad.
I knew Harvey was in it, but and the first part, it was kind of, his art was kind of confusing to me at parts in the beginning, but then once Rico left to go investigate the fire, that's when it really got good to me.
Yeah, I'm scrolling through it now. I'm going to have to take a look at this.
Yeah, so I bought a physical copy of that.
Nice.
And so, yes, We Are Robin is going to be on my DC pull list.
Very cool.
I'm trying to decide, how many books are on your pull list, physical pull list at your shop?
Too many.
Yeah, I want to keep my, like, the guy said if you get 10 or over, you get, like, a 10% discount. I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, I don't see myself getting 10 books. But then I started making my list, and I was like, whoa, I guess
I'm surprised. I was about to say, Tim, I'm surprised you wouldn't have 10, considering what we read and what we like to read.
Yeah, I was thinking in my head, I was like, maybe do 4 Marvel, 4 DC, and then 2 miscellaneous that can be like Image or a Dark Horse series or anything.
I think that's fine. I think that's more than, I think that's perfectly reasonable, especially if you're looking to keep your collection under control. Yes, knock on, you know, yes, we do have the benefit of the show, you know. So we do have, you know, we are able to read a little bit more than the regular pull lister would at your shop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You and know, like for the person that stands at the rack reading everything, you know?
I want to try to support stuff that probably wouldn't normally be, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
I would like to put Invincible Iron Man on my list, and I still might, but I was like, you know, everyone's going to be buying that, so maybe I don't really need to get a physical one that I can just keep reading the digital.
Sure.
But, like, I know Mighty Thor, Black Panther, like, I want to support Totally Awesome Hulk, so I want to get that.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, I start going through, especially Marvel's the hardest.
You're weeding out, and then there's always going to be an X book or two that you want to pick up just because you want to keep up.
Yeah, like Extraordinary X-Men, that's going to be my X-Men book.
You know?
But then I was looking at, and you know, and the human side stuff is growing, so I'm like, I want to get all new and uncanny Inhumans. I guess those are the two Inhuman books.
I think you've already passed 10, Tim.
Yeah, but for DC, so far, it's kind of small. Like, it's, you know, We Are Robin, Batgirl. What's that on my list?
You're not picking up the regular Batman, huh?
Yeah, like, the purple stuff, I'm like, eh, I don't, like, same thing with, like, Invincible Iron Man. Do I really need to?
Gotcha.
Get those. Cyborg. Gotcha. Yeah, We Are Robin, Cyborg, Batgirl, Gotham Academy.
Oh, and nice.
I like Action Comics, so I'm probably going to get that. And then I was like, maybe I'll get Red Hood and Arsenal.
Excuse me.
Yeah. See?
I love it. We should do, you know what we should do? We should do a segment on what we're dropping or what we're adding to our pull list. Maybe it doesn't have to be a regular a regular segment on the show, but we could do like once a month, you know, where we say, well, I'm going to drop so-and-so because I'm just not happy with it, or I'm going to add so-and-so because we've been reviewing it for the past couple of months and it's really been, you know, it's really gotten good.
Yeah.
You know, we'll put our pull list recommendations out on online too. Like, hey, make sure you remember to add this to your local pull list.
Yeah, because I feel like I need help with my pull list, especially the Marvel side.
Really? Yeah. So are you not pulling – I guess you're not pulling Ms. Marvel because you think it's too popular, except
– No, I want to pull that.
Except that Dirt Store, because Dirt says at his store it's not popular at all.
Yeah, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I have 11 so far for Marvel down. See, I got like – I could do 10 Marvel by itself. The top ones I know for sure are Black Panther, Spider-Man, Miles Morales. The Mighty Thor, Extraordinary X-Men, that's four. Spider-Gwen, I want to do Spider-Gwen and Totally Awesome Hulk.
Oh, look at this.
Miss Marvel. I might just cut it like there. Because I also have like Ultimates and Weird World and Doctor
Strange.
Yeah,
that's right. Ultimates is right. Oh my goodness. That's funny as hell.
Yeah.
That is funny as hell. Look at that. Look at all the stuff you're pulling.
That's at least in discussion to be pulled.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what that, see, now I told you were going to get to 10 with no problem.
That's just too much money. I need to find out how much all these costs, you know, week or month, you know, per whatever week they come out. And then, right. You know, hit the calculator and see how much that would cost a month.
Does your shop participate with the Comixology pull list?
I don't know.
Because if you do it,
Dirt explained it last. Didn't he explain it last week, saying like,
right? If your shop doesn't do it now, or if they haven't been doing it, then they don't. They can't do it now.
Well, even if they weren't doing it as of like a year or so ago,
right? Then, right.
And they've been. I guess they've been open a couple of years now. So,
right. You may want to find out, but they probably would have told you that up front.
Yeah. Well, you know? Only if you ask.
Right. So, you know, maybe it's worth like an email or a phone call and saying, hey, by the way, do you do this? You know, because what I have through Comixology is that I can look at what my bill is for this week and next week. And I see what it costs after my discount. So, for example, this week I don't have very much coming out. So I only pulled 1872, Captain Marvel and the Carol Corps, Fury Shield, 50th Anniversary, Inhumans, Weird World, Years of Future Past, right? Mm-hmm. So those books total $23.94. After a 20% discount, it's $19.15. So it has it right here on the screen.
Yeah, I'll find out when I go back Saturday to get the free Batman preview.
Right.
Batman and Robin, Eternal.
Right. So, you know, I mean, that's one of the cool parts about Comixology pull list. I've heard rumblings, and I think Dirt also substantiated this. You know, there's no guarantee that Comixology is going to continue this pull list thing. I remember you said something along the lines of, you know, they're not going to support it because it's not making them any money or something like that. Mm. It's not the same as their digital. So,
and as Matt Wang 97 says, does it count if he drops you from his pull list?
Ah, we got jokes tonight. That's funny. Oh my God. Can I tell you that October 7th, the first week of All New, All Different, my pull list is ridiculous because there's some Secret Wars stuff and some All New, All Different stuff scheduled to come out that week. Before the discount, it's $72.84. That's disgusting.
Yeah.
I don't like those weeks. That's no good.
We ain't mentioned this in news, but I think because I think it came out today, but Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 3 opening scene is online.
Really? Video.
And it, I guess, introduces the Secret Warriors.
Nice.
Whatever version of that will be.
Nice. Going to have to take a look at that. Gonna have to take a look at that. All right. So back to comic book reviews for this week. I'm glad that we had that little discussion though, because I'm, you know, it always helps to be critical about what's on your pull list. You know, because that is money that you are spending. So, you know, as part of your weekly or monthly budget, you have to kind of figure out how much you're spending on entertainment and comics. So it's important to really be critical about what you're pulling. You know, obviously, you know, just like what I described, there's going to be weeks where, you know, with late shipping or multiple shipping, you'll have weeks where you're spending not ungodly amounts of money, but just a lot of money just to make sure that you pay off your pull, you know, that you make your purchases.
And then Marvel doing double shipping, that's 2 issues a month.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, you're not just spending the $3.99 plus your 10% discount, minus your 10% discount. You're spending, you know, a lot more than that, at least double, depending on how many books are double shipping for you.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that's the reason I want to keep the Marvel stuff low.
Oh, I gotcha. I understand. All right. So I'm not going to spoil too much of Weird World number 4 because I believe you wanted to read that.
Yeah, I'm going to read it, but if you want to talk, you can
definitely talk. Well, I mean, I was just going to discuss, you know, this is the penultimate issue. That might be our $10 word for the show. Penultimate. But what we have here is Archon, the king of Polymachus, finding himself in the garden of the Man-Things. And it's, you know, it's an interesting trippy, I'm trying to come up with the right turn of phrase, but it's basically Skull who is out to kill, Skull the Slayer is out to kill Archon, fighting with him in the Garden of the Man-Things, and the Queen of the Man-Things is there as well, and it's rather trippy. I guess that's the word I wanted to use. It's rather trippy, and you know, take from that what you will when I describe it as trippy. There's plenty of psychedelic things in this issue that are meant to kind of screw with your head, and just the way they're meant to screw with Archon's head. So when we get to this, it's a rather funny ending where Archon, still on the quest to find Polymachus, gets to where he thinks it is, and spoiler alert, doesn't find it there. And Archon is just beside himself with sorrow. He's getting ready to end it all. And then the camera pans out, and what we see is where Polymachus has been the entire time. And it's very, very interesting. It's pretty amusing. I'm curious to see where this story winds up. This has been one of the real, real surprises of Secret Wars. It's been a lot of fun to read. If you're looking for, you know, kind of a not so straightforward story, pick this up. It's been a good read. Oh no. Matt Wang at 97. At Matt Wang 97. Jokes with us on Twitter saying, quote, pay off your pull makes comics sound like my crack habit. # pay off your pull. Oh boy. That's funny. You know, you'd be surprised how many people are addicted to buying comics, right?
Yeah, because I went from trying to stay all digital to not have hard copies taking up space to now I gotta have hard copies.
I gotta have it. Gotta have it. Gotta have it. Gotta have it. Got the shivers.
Gotta have it. Gotta have it.
All right. So what do we got left? What do we have left?
Oh, okay. You went, so I can. Let's see. The Flash 44. I've already read.
How is that? I know you like. Is this still Brett Booth doing art?
Yeah, I still like Brett Booth. I can see. Okay. I have seen people, I guess, Doug has mentioned how he isn't the biggest fan. I can see why, but I still enjoy his work.
Sure.
They've introduced Professor Zoom into the, what is left of the New 52 universe. I thought he had already been around before, but I guess that was just Reverse Flash, which I thought they were the same person anyway, but apparently not. Professor Zoom is here, and he's assembled a crew of villains that have some a power. I believe they're all new villains too that have power over either speed or time.
Okay.
And they've kidnapped Henry Allen, and of course, Professor Zoom wants to kill the Flash. So they're doing things to not even kill him, but just to wear him down. Because at the beginning of the issue, it starts with the Flash being teleported into the Pacific Ocean, like 2,000 or 20,000 miles in the Pacific Ocean.
Okay.
Because one of the villains can do that, one of the villains in his crew.
All right.
Of course, Flash ends up surviving, but he's very weakened and angry and mad, which is how Professor Zoom wants him. Because he knows if he just kills the Flash or goes back in time to, you know, when Barry's a kid or whatever and kills him. Well, it actually doesn't make sense. But if he does it now in the present, if he kills him, he knows that he'll become a martyr. And he doesn't want that to happen for the Flash. He wants people to be indifferent to him and then kill him. So then his death won't be this big monumental moment. Let's see. Nothing really too much happens in this issue except the fight at the end. One of the villains, I think named Block, she can slow down the particles in things to make them, I guess, have like weight to them or like be like a block.
Okay.
Anyway, I think she slows down the particles in the air and forms like a dome around the police, the Central City Police Station. And what we do see is Wally West get hit by some like a stray blast, which I'm wondering if that is how he gets his speed powers.
Interesting.
They don't really make a big deal about it when it happens. It's just like one little small panel, so maybe it actually isn't, but it's something to keep an eye on for future issues.
Okay.
But I don't know. The Flash is all right. It's not like if you're not reading it, you're not really missing anything to me.
All right. So I mean,
go read this.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
That's too bad. All right.
I want to actually go back and read the Francis Manapul, Brian Bussolato series. In fact, they were the ones that launched it.
Right. Okay. So let me put out a book. How about... let me finish off Secret Wars in one fell swoop. We have Captain Marvel and the Carol Corps number... Is it number 3?
I don't know.
I'm going to look this up very quickly. No, number 4. I apologize, number 4, because it felt like there were more than 3 issues in this, and there are 4. This is the final issue of this book. This is also the swan song for Kelly Sue DeConnick on the character. What we have is... we don't have any sort of finality to this. We have Carol and her Carol Corps, the Banshees, basically breaking free from, their duties in their corner of Battle World and basically shooting for the stars, aiming for the stars, and trying to find out what, let me backtrack. This book is amongst... I don't want to say a handful because there's definitely more than a handful. There's a definite group of books that have had characters and groups of characters in Secret Wars basically come to the realization that their reality is a sham and they're fighting back against it. This particular book has a group of these characters basically going out into the wild blue yonder and finding out if there's something beyond the sky, seeing if there are stars stars beyond the atmosphere. And we don't find out what they find once they break through the atmosphere of their part of Battle World. We end on a cliffhanger, and we're going to find out, I guess, what happens to all these characters in all new, all different Captain Marvel. But ultimately, what we have is kind of a cool character study on Captain Marvel and how she interacts with some of these characters who we recognize from some of her stories in the regular Marvel 616, and we'll see how they play into the new, all different post Kelly Sue DeConnick. But ultimately, this is another one of those Secret Wars books where we're left with, okay, what was the point of that? You know, and I guess there isn't supposed to be a point in a lot of these. It's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be a cool retelling of some of their origin stories or even some of their exploits today. See how things might have turned out if things had just gone a little differently. If, if turns may have been taken as opposed to avoided. So, you know, that's one book. The other book I wanted to mention is, what was the other Secret Wars book that I had on my plate? Years of Future Past, number 5. Now, this book is interesting because, you know, the art actually follows along with the Art Adams covers. And I want to cite who the artist on this book is. I want to give the artist credit for at least...
Years of Future Past? Mike Norton.
Yeah. Number 5. Mike Norton on this book does an excellent job of evoking the feel of an Art Adams book without, you know, he's definitely not aping anything, but there's definitely a feel to this book that he transfers from the cover into the interior artwork, and it translates very well. I'm not the biggest fan of the story of the siblings that we're dealing with here, the siblings of the children of Kitty Pryde and Colossus, and it's a lot of anti-mutant hysteria, because this is what Doom thinks of mutants. Lots of the stuff draws on the original Years of Future Past, Days of Future Past story with the assassination or the possible assassination of Robert Kelly. But ultimately, at the end of the story, we're left with, so what was the point of this? Maybe it was just the point. Maybe the point of it was just to tell a cool story and, come out of it with an additional understanding of these characters. So those are my last two Secret Wars books.
I will quickly do. I'm saving my click of the week for last. So that leaves me with the Vertigo Fall 2015 Preview Magazine. And there's really not much to review with this. It's we get a couple of, like, 6-page previews to some of the comics, or just like a 1-page with like a synopsis and art. For those that don't know, I haven't read any Vertigo books in my past. I didn't read Swamp Thing or Animal Man or Why the Last Man or Sandman.
Okay.
Or Sandman Overture. So I'm kind of interested in checking out some of these coming books. The gist is, for it's 12 new comics, and it's going to be a new comic once a week for 12 weeks. I think going all the way through December. So obviously, what, for 3 months. My math is right.
Cool.
Some of them are limited series. Some of them are billed as ongoings or monthlies, they say. But there's a couple creators that I like and want to check out their stuff. Let me pull it out here so I can name the ones I liked. Let's see, Twilight Children from Gilbert Hernandez and Darwin Cook. That looked like it had potential. We actually get like a 6-page preview for that.
Okay.
Unfollow, which is like a social media comic where this guy with a fortune created like an app and wants to leave his fortune. He's about to die and wants to leave his fortune to 140 random people.
All right.
So it's like some of the follow. My dog sneezing. It's getting the crap out of me.
It's all right.
I was gonna say. So it's like a game of like some of the 140 people like trying to kill the others so they can be like the last ones left.
Okay.
That's from writer Rob Williams and artist Mike Dowland. Rob Williams is currently writing Martian Manhunter. So I've been enjoying that. So I'm like, hey, I need to check out more of his stuff. There's like a 6-page preview for that. The artist, the Mike Dowland guy, he kind of reminds me of Frank Quietly.
Mm-hmm.
Lucifer from Holly Black and artist Lee Garbett, who did Loki, Agents of Asgard. I like his art, so I'll check it out for that. Plus, I never read the previous Lucifer volume, and there's a new TV series on the way, so.
Right.
There's like another 6-page preview for that. I'll just highlight the ones I'm going to look forward to. Speaking of Mike Allred, he's the artist on Art Ops with writer Sean Simon. It has something to do with art coming to life, I believe.
Okay. It's Toy Story, but with art. Okay.
No, The Sheriff of Babylon is one. I usually don't care too much about, like, army stories or whatever, or war stories, but it's got Tom King and Mitch Gerards on it.
Nice.
So, you Punisher fans.
Yep. Punisher, Activity. Yep. Let's get on that.
Yeah. And I'm, of course, enjoying Tom King on Omega Men and Grayson. And soon to be The Vision over at Marvel.
There you go.
So this is an 8-issue series. New Romancer sounds interesting from Peter Milligan and Brett Parson. It's a person has a job, becomes a coder for New Romancer, an internet dating app that's seen better days. The girl's name is Letsy that's working at New Romancer. She has little luck finding love. To take her mind off reality, she's coding her perfect partner online based on one of history's most notorious lovers, Lord Byron.
Okay.
And, of course, he ends up coming to life. So.
Cool.
And then on the back of it has the 3-month publishing schedule for when what books come out each month. So.
Awesome.
You can run yours down.
There's some more books you're going to be adding to your pull list.
Yeah, that's like in the – that leave those for the miscellaneous slots.
Just, you know, if you're going to be conscious of how much you're spending, just do it as if it was only going to come out once a month and then tack on another $6 or $8 for those double shipping books. You know what I mean?
Don't like it.
Yeah. So, all right. So let me run through what's left on my pull list. I got pull list on the brain. On my list of books this week, I skimmed. It's not fair for me to give a full review on this trade paperback from IDW, but it's an anthology book. It's called Airwolf Airstrikes #1, and I skimmed it because I'm going to be honest, I'm one of those 80s kids that if you're going to do a tribute book to one of these 80s properties that's always been popular and has garnered enough support to warrant some sort of relaunch or rebranding or reincarnation, if you're going to do it, you got to at least give us some fan service and show us what we're familiar with. And what my biggest, I guess what would be the biggest difficulty anyone who's like that would have with this book is that they basically hold you in suspense as to what Airwolf is going to look like until the very end. And this is a trade paperback. This is like I believe it's 4 or 5 stories, shorter stories being told to kind of flesh out what the new status quo is for Airwolf and the characters. Airwolf is the helicopter and the characters that fly missions in Airwolf, kind of filling out where they are now. it took a while for them. It takes the entire anthology for them to show that, yes, we are going to be getting a version of Airwolf that we should be familiar with, but it took a long time to get to that point. And I definitely stopped reading and just started skimming. So that's not, you know, maybe that's not the best tactic for keeping these readers who are opening this looking for something to be familiar with. And last on my list is Hacktivist Volume 2, Number 3. And if I've gone basically the entire night without saying that something was a sleeper candidate for Click of the Week, I apologize. I think my first sleeper candidate for Click of the Week was the Fury 50th Shield Anniversary Number 1. And I think the other candidate for Click of the Week for me this week would have been Inhumans Attilan Rising Number 5, but for the ending that kind of left me out in the cold. I think the last candidate for Click of the Week for me would be the Hacktivist Volume 2, Number 3. I'm a big fan of this. Shout out to Liz Milano, creator of the concept. The book is written by, it's co-written, but there's two co-writers on the book. And I think the strongest point of the book is actually the art, which is interesting because it doesn't involve any superheroing. It doesn't involve, action scenes per se. There are a few here and there, but I think the strongest point of the book is the art, followed closely by the writing. Bear with me for just another few seconds as I pull up the credits for the book. It's Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, co-writers, and Marcus Toe and Ian Herring on art. I'm definitely going to try to track these folks down. I believe Toe is going to be at New York Comic Con. I'm going to double check on the rest of them as well. This book, if you weren't familiar with the concept, is that the first series dealt with hackers who created a social media company who ended up working for and against the United States government. The second volume involves not necessarily a spin-off group, but a group inspired by the actions of this hacker entity that was originally called Save Yourself. And this hacker group now is basically plotting certain terrorist actions, and it's up to the former leaders of Save Yourself, the two main characters, Ed Hickox and Nate Graft, to stop them. And this issue has ends on a cliffhanger, but there's a lot of action in this. It's not superheroic action, but there's definitely some espionage elements to it because of the government involvement. Like I said, the art is just really good, makes it very easy to follow. There's elements to this that may strike very close to home for you, Tim, being in IT and being very computer literate, obviously. It's just a very well-told story, and it is my closest thing to, well, I wouldn't say it's a sleeper candidate for Click of the Week anymore. Let's just put it that way. I enjoyed this book a lot. I think you guys should get into it.
I definitely want to get into it for Marcus Toe's art, because I'm a fan.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, it's just a matter of too many comics, too little time.
Mm-hmm.
I will say the co-writers on this will be on the Batman and Robin Eternal writing team.
Oh, nice.
Lansing and something, right?
Right. I just read their names too. That's awful. I can't remember them, but just read them.
Yeah, it's four names to remember. So
yeah, Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing.
There you go.
So that's that.
So that was your Click of the Week?
I didn't want to come right out and say it, but yeah, Hacktivist Volume 2, Number 3 is my Click of the Week this week.
I'll get my Click of the Week out the way because it's the last book I read this week. Grayson Number 12.
Nice.
So this was fun. So Dick Grayson has left Spiral, the spy organization group, or at least he's trying to leave Spiral, and he hasn't heard from his handler back in Gotham, Batman, for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes back home and, of course, has to find out that Bruce has lost his memory. He has a conversation with him, even though Dick is in disguise. So he has a conversation with him, with Bruce, and Spiral Agent shows up. I think Agent Zero is her name. She shows up and tells Dick that, nope, he's not done with Spiral yet. And if he doesn't come back, they'll reveal to the world that who Batman really is. And it's kind of like a little journey where he goes around, Dick goes around meeting back up with all the different members of the Bat family who thought he was dead.
Okay.
And during each meetup, there's like these floating caption balloons in the background. And then, and I mean, when I say there's a lot, there's like a bunch of them. Just all.
I did flip through this. I saw what you're referring to. It basically takes up the entire page. There are no backgrounds. It takes up the entire page. It's like a splash page between the two characters. And basically each balloon expresses, you know, based on the shape, you can tell who's speaking or thinking it. And it's,
can you?
I think so.
A lot of times I couldn't tell who was supposed to be speaking.
Really? Now I'm going to have to flip through it. Because I thought I could tell pretty quickly who was saying what.
Like, but, I thought you had to, like, sort of decipher it through the dialogue.
The actual dialogue? Possibly. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I only skimmed it. I didn't have a chance to read it. So, but I thought I could tell who was saying what. But I mean, that might have been...
You have a good eye. But the cool thing is he took, Tom King took dialogue from a bunch of old comics. So it's all real dialogue that has appeared in various Batman related comics. I read it helped to read a Newsarama interview with him and Tim Seeley after I read it. They sort of talk about the process. And Tom King basically said he just went and read a bunch of the stories that resonate with him that, you know, involved Dick Grayson, and thought it would be a good, instead of having that, you know, because he was saying a lot of times these reunion stories are like sappy, mm-hmm. you know, people crying and whatnot. He didn't want to do the same old. So that the way to sort of skip all that was to put those caption balloons to sort of have that play the part of reliving old memories, which I thought was a great idea. And then as he's meeting with Red Robin, Red Hood, Batgirl, Damian / Robin, he gives them all a present. And another brilliant thing was, I guess each present that he gives them, or gift he gives them, is part of this Clue Master's code, which I guess is like a known thing to, maybe if you've been reading Batman or Grayson or Nightwing comics, mm-hmm. you know about this Night Clue Master code. So it was like the first word of every sentence he said was like part of the clue, along with something hidden inside the gift.
Okay.
Which, of course, all the, you know, Red Robin and Red Hood and Batgirl, they all knew that he was giving them a code without telling them,
mm-hmm.
just because they're all geniuses. So basically, he was back when that Spiral agent showed up and told him to come back to Spiral. She gave him like 48 hours or whatever amount of time to go say his goodbyes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what he was doing, but he was also recruiting the Bat family to help him take down Spiral.
Huh.
So it's like, and at the end of the issue, he goes back to Spiral with his hypnos in place, but the Bat family can actually look through the hypnos.
The hypnos. That's the it's like the facial camouflage that they use.
Yeah, so they can see through the hypnos and decipher the agent's face, and they actually see who she is. Who I mean, I didn't recognize her, but apparently a bunch of this stuff ties in. Is going to lead up to Robin War.
Okay.
In the fall, so like the seeds are starting to be planted here, and probably the best moment of the issue was when Damian and Dick saw each other and their reaction.
Okay.
You're alive? Both of them said that at the same time to each other, because both of them thought the other one was dead.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Because, whatchamacallit, the Son of Batman, the, you know, whatchamacallit, Alpha Omega hadn't happened
He was dead. Right. Dick Grayson was quote unquote dead and off with Spyro at that point. So he didn't know Damian was alive. And then in a sweet moment, like after the one page panel of "You're alive" and them looking all shocked at each other, Damian comes flipping down because he was, I guess he was kind of far away. He comes flipping over to Dick and jumps in his arms again, the big hug. So it's Damian being, you know, we know Damian to be this hard, you know, hard shell,
right,
or hard exterior guy, but seeing Dick alive brought back the kid in him, and he was all happy. So it was the bit, you know, younger brother, older brother dynamic.
Sure. That's cool.
Cool. So click of the week for me.
Awesome. Awesome. Do we have any info from Dirt or Dirt, from Roddy?
Dirt put his in the spreadsheet or in the drop blocks. I'm opening it out. Hellboy in Hell, number 8.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. Shout out to kidding. Hellboy in Hell.
Yep. Did you want to go through more of yours? Or?
No, I got mine. I got all mine. Okay. I got all mine because I knocked out those two Secret Wars books in one shot. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. Roddy hasn't put in a click of the week because he hasn't read anything.
Yeah, he said he hadn't read enough.
Yep.
Please, let's make sure.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So I guess that's it for the week.
Cool. So we only have a couple more weeks before New York Comic Con. Listen in as I try to prep, you know, hopefully not at the last minute before I go. Who knows, maybe this year I'll go Thursday night also and miss out on the show. I'm not 100% sure what my plans are going to be for New York Comic Con yet. But, you know, I do have a 4-day pass.
You're there, search them out.
Exactly. Like I said, I do have a 4-day pass. I may try to swing through Thursday and then rush home to get on the show. Or I may just have to call in my appearance, maybe show up late. We'll see. But yeah, the next couple of weeks is going to be prep for New York Comic Con. So anyone, if you want to just hang out, meet up during the show, tweet me at @age_70 on Twitter. So
Baltimore Comic Con is this weekend. A lot of creators going to that.
So. Baltimore Comic Con, huh? Hmm.
Yeah. That's where a bunch of those new series were being announced at the Baltimore Retailer Summit.
Right. I wish I had planned this better because it might have been fun to drive down there because I don't know what the crowds would be like. I think tickets might be easier to get and it might be easier to maneuver around Baltimore Comic Con. It's a shame I didn't plan that out.
I need like a nice calendar to see when all these various.
They do have a website. Right? If you just Google comic book conventions, they do put that together. Someone does put that together. But
that's Google comic book convention calendars.
Comicbookconvention.com or convention scene.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yep. So if you just look at if you just look up their calendars, they'll show you what's going on. But it's a matter of just planning because sometimes you need to plan ahead a little bit, you know, get the books that you want signed or books that you want to pick up, you know, things that you want to pick up just specifically at a con, who you want to see and when you're going to get there. So, you know, it's a shame I didn't plan ahead because I did have a couple of days off on hand. I could have driven down for at least a day, maybe Saturday. Maybe I still might. Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? Anyway.
Make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts at TimDogg98 and at CBCron.
I'm hitting it. A little bit of a lag.
Follow Dirt or Doug on his individual Twitter account at PCN_Dirt on Twitter and PopCultureNetwork.com. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. And Agent 70 is at Agent_70 on Twitter. And shout out to Matt Wang. Follow him on Twitter at MattWang97. And we'll be back live next Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. We are the Comfort Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Peace!